Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 367, and it's proudly brought to you by the always growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you'd like to support the show, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. My name is Jason Heaton, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and co-host, James Stacey. James, happy Monday. We're recording a day early today.
Yeah, we sure are. I'm in New York. And so we're using a different set of gear than we might normally. I flew down to the city early this morning, and just because of a kind of a busy week of shows and little meetings and previews for Watches of Wonder stuff, I have to make sure I don't say something I'm not allowed to say on this episode. But yeah, it's nice to be in the city. It was so bitter cold in Toronto that coming here to where I think it's like maybe 1 or 2 Celsius. Yeah, it's 1. Feels nice. Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure.
I'm not wearing a giant winter jacket, and so that's nice. It's always nice to see the team and that sort of thing, and I've got a few other updates, but we do have some sort of fun housekeeping, and I don't want to step on the major one, which is this is your 50% or your midway auction recap. Why don't you bring people up to speed on the CWN1 prototype auction, which is going on Slack as we're recording this?
Yeah, so if you didn't tune into episode 366 last week, we introduced an auction that we're doing to raise money for Second Harvest Heartland, which is a food bank here in Minneapolis that is quite large and has a good reputation. We actually had a few folks on Slack that said they had volunteered with them and vouched for them. And we're raising money to kind of help them in their efforts to bring relief to those that are struggling with food shortages, specifically here in the Twin Cities and Western Wisconsin. And what we're doing is we're auctioning off the prototype of the Crew Watch number 1 that we did in collaboration with CWC last year. This is the prototype piece that was delivered to me in Wales in June of 2 years ago when I did the fan dance, and I wore it for that and kind of call it a shakedown. And it's been kind of sitting ever since. I don't wear it much. You know, we got the production watches out and sold, and those were a big success. But I've had this prototype sitting here with a glued-on bezel insert. The bezel rotates. Everything works fine. The watch is in good shape, but it's kind of a bit of a piece of TGN history and a really cool watch. And it's got the engraving on the back with the XXX/24 serial number to show that it's a prototype. This one has the Ronda quartz movement in it, so it's not the high accuracy ETA that's in the production version. And it'll come in a CWC box with. We'll throw in an extra TGN signed NATO with that as well. So to cut a long story short, the bidding is only open on Slack, and we have a special channel there called CWN1-auction. And we've encouraged people to submit bids there, with the winning bid having to make a donation within 24 hours directly to Second Harvest Heartland, and then just proving to us that they made that submission by showing us the receipt, and then I will ship the watch. So bidding ends on Monday. So that's actually a week from today. Don't get confused, though, because this episode goes up on a Thursday. So it ends on Monday, March 9th at 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. And that allows us to record on that Tuesday and announce the winner during episode 368. So anyone can bid, and we will cover shipping. Although outside the U.S., the recipient is responsible for any import duties. So that's kind of the way it's working. And currently, this is really exciting.
Yeah, drum roll if we had the budget for that, but we don't. But yeah, let them know. And if it changes while we're recording, we'll do an update.
The high bid is $4,000 as of this recording, wow. As of Monday afternoon. That's pretty remarkable. I'm just thrilled to see that. And thanks to everybody that's been so generous in their bids. And I can't wait to see who takes this one home. So it's really exciting. So that's kind of the big news for this week.
Yeah, this is super cool. And very, very exciting. And kudos to everybody who's already been in there. It's cool to see the number of people who are in there just to watch.
Yeah.
Because there's well over 200 people on the thread or in the channel. And then, of course, there's not 200 people bidding.
Yeah.
Although it's a pretty good variety of people bidding as far as these things sort of go. But yeah, I think this is great. And if there happens to be an update as we record, we'll bring you an auction watch segment, I promise. But yeah, this is great, and we'll announce the winner and owner and donator all in one in the next episode, which will be great. And then as far as my side goes, another big shout out to the Vancouver and Montreal Timepiece Show. That's the end of April and the end of May. You can visit timepieceshow.com for more details. I wouldn't call this an ad. We work with them. I attend the show. I'll be at the Vancouver show. I'm sorting out details with Marathon and Roldorf for another great party. So stay tuned on that. We should have a better idea of what that'll look like and the timing, you know, in the next episode or two, which is great and something I'm very excited for. We're trying to make it something that's even easier to attend than last year. So let me get back to you when I have those details in hand. But yeah, timepieceshow.com, you can get your tickets for both of those events. And then if you are planning deeper into the calendar into September, Jason and I will be at the Toronto show as well. And that will include, I mean, look, unless something crazy happens, a fantastic party with Marathon, which have become something of legend. Thank you. Thanks so much to Marathon and to Martin for hosting. So that's our little download for the Timepiece shows. And then, yeah, man, other than that, I'm in New York. It's Monday evening. You know, it's nice to be here. It's sunny. It's, like I said, comparatively, it's so warm. It's still cold, but it's nice and warm. And then, man, I spent my weekend moving rooms in my house.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're kind of shuffling the layout of our house because, you know, we've got this now 8-month-old son, and he's ready to kind of have his own space, but we didn't really have just a fully spare bedroom, but we had my office. And so we kind of ran things around, and now my office has been swapped for a nursery. And one of the bedrooms is, you know, one of the bedrooms is now my office. So I have a bigger space, but I mean, this is probably how it is with most of these sorts of things. But like if we'd done a little pre-move interview, I would have been like, oh, you know, it won't take that long. It's probably this much stuff. Dude, it was 10 times more stuff than I expected that I somehow managed to fit in. Like, you've been in that office. It's about enough room for two people to stand and move around. I wouldn't call it a tiny room, but it's not big either. It's the right size for an office, essentially. And moving everything up the two flights of stairs, like from the basement to the second floor, and all that was an arduous task, but I believe we got through the bulk of it before I had to, you know, load up a suitcase and come down to the city for a few days. So, and I got to rehang some artwork. So I got to hang the Doxa poster from you and you know, Justin Souter's incredible Explorer 2 painting. And that kind of stuff is fun to decide where it goes. And I'll probably change another 3 or 4 times before I really dial it in. But yeah, that was my whole weekend.
Yeah, and you got a little functional fitness workout in there too.
I did. Yeah. I definitely realized just how out of shape I was on my 40th trip up my stairs. Yeah.
Well, the news here is over the weekend I may have become a cat owner again.
Oh man.
Yeah. So it's a funny story. I was out walking Ruby the dog, and came back at Christie's house in South Minneapolis here in the fenced in yard. And I let Ruby off of her leash and she came running in, and lo and behold, there was a little orange cat in the yard, and the cat got spooked. Ruby got excited, chased the cat, which ran up a tree, you know, quite a ways up, and sat there and just looked down, and Ruby was going ballistic, barking and jumping and whatnot. So I finally got her inside and grabbed a ladder out of the garage and propped it up on the tree and climbed up and was able to coax the cat into my arms and brought it down. And it is the sweetest little young orange tabby cat. I've posted some pictures and asked for some advice in the Pets channel on Slack. So if you want to see some photos or chime in.
I gotta check this out.
You can check that out. It's just a sweet little tiny, probably a kitten or, you know, a year or less. So now it's currently living in the studio apartment above Christie's garage, and we're a little uncertain what to do with it because we've put out a number of flyers and posted on social media and on neighborhood groups, and we had it scanned for a microchip, and unfortunately it doesn't have one. It didn't have a collar. So, you know, it's a little bit of it's one of those scenarios where if things happen, you know, life presents you with an opportunity. Sometimes you kind of have to take it, even if you didn't plan for it. So I'm not sure if this is going to be, you know, an unplanned new pet in our lives or not. And we haven't integrated the pets yet. So Ruby still barks at this little kitten through the window of the door. So, but I think there's hope.
He or she is very cute.
Yeah. It's a very, very sweet.
This is great.
Really personable.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Sarah was somebody she followed on Instagram, maybe, or somebody, a friend also was essentially a cat found them.
Oh yeah.
adopted them, and she was like, you know, if a cat found me and
yeah,
would it? And I'm like, well, what are you gonna say? No.
Yeah, right.
The poor little thing that needs something.
I know.
Yeah, that's yeah. Oh, what a cutie, yeah, man. That's so great.
Anyway, we'll see where this all goes.
What are you calling him or her?
We don't have, you know, it's dangerous to pick a name because you start to get too attached, and then if the owner does turn up, we'd be heartbroken. So we're holding our breaths. We'll see what happens here. But I'll give an update next week when things, if anything changes. So that's the big news here.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. Look, we've got a fun one together. You know, we do these every now and then where we realize that due to the cycle of the show or guests or other topics, we just kind of don't talk about new watch releases that often. And sometimes it's like that watch is kind of just, it won't be remembered in 3 months.
Yeah.
And other times you just don't get to it, but they're ones that we like and we're interested in. So I'm pumped to get to that in just a minute. Why don't we kick off sort of a more watch theme with some wrist check?
Yeah, I'm wearing a watch today that I don't think I've mentioned on the show before. You know, I had the Seamaster Pro 300 meter diver, courtesy of Chris Soule, for a couple of years. He had sent it to me as a complete surprise. It was several Christmases ago, and it was a bit of, you know, he said, just keep it, wear it. You know, do with what you like, because we've talked about it so much on the show, the 2254. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little embarrassed to admit, about a year and a half ago, I bought a 2264, which is the exact same watch, but with a quartz movement, from somebody on the BST channel in Slack. Christy's been wearing that most of the time on a white rubber strap that I got from Zealand, which fits it really nicely. It's just a great watch. But I sent the 2254 back to Chris Soule. It felt a little excessive to have two fairly identical watches in the house here. And so I've been wearing the 2264 a little bit more myself. And it's just such a perfect watch. I mean, it's kind of does everything other than the 12-hour bezel that the CWN1 does. You know, it's got a really accurate quartz movement. It's the classic sword hand. You know, kind of MOD dialed Seamaster Pro from the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, kind of the heyday of Omega that we always, you know, mourn the loss of. And it's quartz, which just makes it so fun because it's such a cool, high-end, nice Omega, slim, easy wearing, versatile, handsome. But then it's got this quartz movement in it with, get this, an independent set hour hand. So advancing like today, you know, or yesterday, sorry, March 1st. February ended on the 28th, so I had to advance it through 3 days to update the date wheel. And you just do it by flipping the hour hand around. Like, why doesn't every watch have this function? I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, everybody, any watch nerd knows about these features. I had this function on my Grand Seiko GMT that I had years ago. But for just a straight three-hand dive watch to have that in quartz just makes it, it just elevates it. It's such a great feature, and I just love it for that.
Yeah, I gotta be honest here. I did not know it had that feature.
It is so cool.
Like, I didn't know that
forward
that whatever
or back
movement is in that watch.
Yeah.
Is jump set. That's awesome.
It's awesome.
That's so handy.
I know. Yeah. For travel, for changing dates, times, you don't lose your time setting. It's, yeah, it's great. So anyway, I'm excited about it.
Man, we're really becoming quartz guys.
Yeah, we are.
I feel like it's been a long and slippery slope, like a gradual, but for many miles.
Yeah.
But I feel like we recently have picked up some steam, where we're really, really moving downhill in the quartz parade.
Oh, that's
here
so at, true.
At kind of a solid clip.
It's quite the arc of enthusiasm we're following here. It's kind of the opposite of most people, but anyway, it's great. Yeah. And you're wearing quartz today too.
I am. Yeah. I mean, there's just something, like I think I've talked about it in the past, there's something so nerdy about it. And I love that you brought up the date change.
Yeah.
On your 2264, because I'm wearing the aerospace. I wanted to show it to, you know, Tantan and Mark and Tim and all these guys down at the office, because they had seen it, you know, on calls and social media and that sort of thing. So I figured I would just wear that down. It's easy. And I didn't even think about it. I didn't even think about it until today.
Yeah.
I got on the plane, you know, March 2nd, and I realized, oh, it's a QP.
Yeah. Oh.
I didn't have to change the date.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, man.
It's on the 2nd.
Right on.
So I just, it's just a delightful thing.
Yeah.
I've rambled on a lot about it. Like I said, I think it's one of the nerdiest sports watches ever made.
Yeah.
Of the entire arc. And I think I want to be straight that I think that when you talk about these sorts of watches, you would go Pluton to emergency, like not just the aerospace proper,
mm-hmm.
but this idea of like a sports watch that has all these extra features, a Swiss G-Shock, if you will,
yeah.
in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the aerospace, specifically these 40 millimeter ones, it's like the one that you get the most of all the best parts of the Pluton, from the sizing and the great hands, from the nice screens and the titanium construction that you might have seen on something like an Emergency. I think this one comes together really nicely, and I know that it's a watch that is divisive.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to have a home on the TGN Slack to a certain extent. I don't mind that it's divisive. I think it's that nerdy. It's kind of Baroque. It's a little bit too self-serious. Those are all things I'm okay with.
Yeah.
And I think it gives the watch a really interesting personality despite being a quartz watch.
Yeah.
I think I've said this before, if you're going to go quartz, go high accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, like, if you're going to go quartz, just go anti-digi, like get all the features out of it.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not that I dislike digital watches. There's some that I really, really love.
Mm-hmm.
Timex 8 lap, of course.
Yeah.
But blending the two is such a 90s sort of idea. And my aerospace is from about 2000.
Yeah.
And I just think it's something that the smartwatch kind of killed, mm-hmm. in many ways, mm-hmm. like was the final nail in this type of watch. And now we're only seeing them, like the Momentum UDT coming back as like nostalgic, nerdy sort of releases. And I think that's what speaks to me.
Yeah.
They're fun watches. I have a blast playing with it. And I have a blast watching, you know, Tantan was wearing a Royal Oak and took it off his wrist and put this on. I was like, hey, that's pretty good. And then I was like, press the crown, and it starts doing the repeater. And it's just like, it's a gas if you're a watch nerd.
Yeah.
It's just, they're just funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting. We're both wearing watches from a similar era. You know, it's the kind of that golden, we need to come up with a name for that era. It was kind of the golden era before watches got really expensive and kind of took themselves too seriously. It was kind of this era when they were serious but didn't take themselves too seriously, if that makes any sense, you know.
Well, they're still tools, right? So they had to be serious in a different way than a luxury item necessarily. You know, I was having a conversation at lunch today, and I started, my brain started to wrap around this idea that like some of my favorite watches,
mm-hmm.
all came from eras when watches weren't very cool. It's like the brands were trying harder to make solutions.
Mm-hmm.
I adore my mechanical watches. I do. And I don't feel like that's changing for me. But the extent to which I really like quartz is definitely, you know, it's slowly laddering up, you know, between the everything we talk about with the CWN1 and now something like this aerospace and my 8 laps and that kind of thing. There's a lot of fun to be had. And it doesn't all have, these are expensive, the aerospaces, to be fair.
Yeah.
I probably doubled in cost since I owned my first one to the second one.
Yeah.
For me, totally worth it. I'm very happy with spending that money that way. But not all of them are expensive. You look at like the Aqualand duplex that I've got.
Yeah.
Was the right. equivalent of a couple $100, and really does a very similar thing.
Yeah.
Just so much fun.
Yeah.
Anyways.
All right.
Rambling on about quartz. That's not what y'all signed up for. You're here to not hear about watches from 2000. You're here about watches from 2026.
Yeah.
And we've got a list. Jason, where would you want to kick this one off? You want to do a couple easy ones at the lower end of the price range? A couple from Timex?
Yeah, let's do that. I think you're well qualified to introduce these Timex ones, which are, I'm pretty keen on this Flix. So tell us about it.
The Flix is very cool. So let's start there. Flix is a $120 version of the Iron Man. It's a bit of a throwback style. And the Flix refers to the ability where you can kind of flip your wrist and it activates the backlight.
Yeah,
Which is fun, and obviously I believe that's on other watches. I'm almost certain I've had G-Shocks that had that feature, mm-hmm. or it might have been Pro Trek. One of my Pro Treks back in the day had it, something like that. Definitely, I feel like my Rangeman did as well. I hope I'm not conflating all of those digital watches, and so many that I've loved over the years. But this really captures that early 90s gray, black, very plasticky look,
mm-hmm.
with a lot of orange accents, and it is kind of that OG 8 lap that I've talked a ton about before from the early 90s, but in the beefier version, where you're getting a somewhat more bulbousy sort of oversized case and a stronger bezel design. I just think these are kind of cool. They did another version with Huckberry where if you don't like the gray black coloring, it's more of a green with orange, like a OD sort of olive green with orange and a black bezel. Also very cool. I think it's a few bucks more. They're all between about $100 and $130. And I think if you enjoy these watches, but you want something that wears a little bit more like a sports watch than a triathlon or an 8 lap, I think these are a really good option. They look really cool. Nice clear screen. but this takes you up to like a 42 millimeter maximum width, which I think is the 3-9 measurement. I don't think it's going to wear like a 42 millimeter watch, but it gives you another option in the sort of 8-lap vibe.
Yeah, this is great. Good to see Timex keeping the Iron Man fire burning here. It's a great watch that just keeps evolving and existing. That's great. And then we've got this the T80. Yeah, okay, this isn't my taste, but I get it. It's kind of cool.
Me neither, but I do think it's very cool. The T80 is a legacy model offered in both resins and steel. Recently kind of brought back, and then I've been tagged in this a bunch because people know that I adore things that glow in the dark and the case strap and of course backlight all glow on this T80. So it's a resin case, probably very similar to what's used on the Abu Garcia, which has a glow in the dark case. And then the resin strap, it's an 18 millimeter resin strap, is also fully luminous. So all told, this is worth it just to click on the pictures. go check it out on the website just for the photos. I don't like glow-in-the-dark straps, and I don't know. I can't really describe why. It's like too much of a good thing, maybe. But for whatever reason, my taste for straps kind of limits my interest in a fully glow-in-the-dark thing. Maybe it feels too much like a toy. I don't know. But I think these are like a lot of fun for a watch for $100. And maybe it's not for you. Maybe it's for one of your children or for a niece, a nephew, somebody that you might be buying a gift for. Because I think this is a really fun way to bring a kid into having a watch, being able to tell time, tracking the date, having a couple features, and then having this thing that glows all night too. Like as a much younger man, when I was a kid, I would have loved this.
Yeah,
I would have had it next to my glow worm and it would have been great. But yeah, I wanted to call out for Timex for these two, because I think both of them are great. And I love that I think you can buy something that's fun. Maybe it's a weekend watch for you. Maybe it's one that you actually use for working out. Maybe it's one you just use when you're on vacation somewhere. But these are like both of them in the range of about $100, maybe less through some retailers. And I think both are pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. Let's move up the price tree here, so to speak. Maybe let's go with the Citizen. That looks like they've got a new Tsuyosa Shore, which is a watch. I think we've probably talked about this family of watches, but with the Shore, they're kind of adding a dive watch aesthetic to it with a rotating bezel. So this is it's a 40 millimeter case in stainless steel with a bracelet, decent looking bracelet. It's got this navy blue dial and matching bezel, a date function, and this is an automatic. So it's the 8210 Miyota movement inside of this one.
Yep.
100 meters water resistance. So, you know, technically not a dive watch, but come on, you could use it for, you could use this for diving, especially if it's Citizen. I mean, I think like Citizen and Seiko, like you could take like a 50 meter watch from these guys. Don't quote me on this or hold me to it, but, and take it diving if you wanted to. They make these things so overbuilt and so rugged for what you get. So,
for sure.
Yeah. It's a kind of a cool little offering. And, this one is $495. So a reasonable price, kind of a new offering from Citizen. It's pretty straight down the middle in terms of styling. There's nothing particularly bold about it, but if you just want kind of a classic looking blue dial dive watch and you can't pony up for, you know, like a Black Bay 58 blue or something like that, this might scratch an itch.
Yeah, I think this is kind of classic Japanese and Citizen dial design, with the hand style, the larger markers. You get a date at 3, like you said, it's an automatic, and then the rest of it is this sort of sleek, almost, you know, I would say maybe 70s into 80s in terms of its footprint, but it's a integrated bracelet steel sports watch. They do a gold version with a green dial if that's more your speed. But I love the idea where it's not so much that they're saying it's a dive watch. They're just adding a bezel to a design they already make that's pretty solid with the Tsuyosa.
Yeah.
Tsuyosa. With this Tsuyosa. And I like the Shore naming. I like that it's so conventional that the photo on the site isn't even that interesting. I think it's the kind of watch where you kind of have to go down and look at the couple of wrist shots they included to get a little bit more of a vibe. And then it's Citizen. Like, it's probably available nearby to where you live, and you just have to go check it out. I think it's quite a handsome looking watch. It actually, in many ways, especially if you're kind of zoomed out and you can't quite tell the integrated bracelet and that sort of thing, it kind of cuts some of a similar aesthetic to like a Halios in some ways.
Yeah.
With the like a C4th and that sort of thing. And I'm not against a casual watch that someone could wear at the pool, at the beach, on vacation, And even up to diving, I've dove with watches that are 100 meters. It's a question of whether or not the brand actually means 100 or if they just mean less than 200, yeah. Whatever that means, right? Like there's, it's, you know, the water, we've complained at length about the water resistance thing, but Citizen's not one of the brands I would put on the list where the number doesn't really mean that much. If they say it's 100, I'm sure it's 100. And yeah, I think this is a solid thing for $500. And I think, especially if you felt like the standard model, maybe was just kind of, you wanted that something a little bit more sporty, a little bit more fidgety. You like having a dive bezel. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice stuff.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. We might as well, maybe we just keep moving up the tree here. The price tree. It looks like we've got a Notice, Obscura 2 for $650. Have you handled one of these before, right?
So yeah, I haven't had this in hand, but I know some of the team behind the original collab. So the original model, which came out in February of 2025, was limited to based on a pre-order with deliveries in June of last year. And I think they just made however many were pre-ordered. I don't know what that number is. But it's a fairly interesting watch. It's a 38 millimeter, so it's 40 across the bezel. It's made by Notice, which is, I think, a very good thing. And then the collaboration is with Beers and Cameras, of which I know Juan from Beers and Cameras fairly well. We've hung out at a couple Leica events around Germany and have spent some time with them. And the idea is you can use the bezel to help measure a certain style of exposure when you're taking the camera or when you're taking photos. So it uses the Sunny 16 rule and a setting on the bezel and the Riot that basically allows you to adjust for a given ISO based on it being sunny or cloudy. And if you're a film photographer, if you're an analog photographer, this may sound in your mind immediately understandable. Otherwise, I can link a story I wrote for Hodinkee when the original model launched. This new one is now available in two versions. Sort of steel version with a black bezel and an all black version. Both have the same sort of dial and handset. So it really is just the small differences between the two, and the pricing $650 or $725 for the black DLC. So a bit of a premium for the black one. Otherwise, it looks like they largely stuck to the format of the previous version, which I believe to be quite successful for them. And yeah, they no longer have the Beers and Camera logo on the front of the dial. I believe it's on the case back. And just to kind of clean up the dial design. And then they've modified or refined the bezel action as well. And then the dial now has like a fume finish. And finally, they're also including the latest version of the Notice extension clasp. So in the bracelet. So there's some updates there. And really, it's just a really good looking watch with a little bit of a nerdy complication function set for $650, or I guess a little bit more if you want the all black one. But I'm a fan of these. I thought it was a cool design. It's not something I've seen done before.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't say that it's something I would need, but I could definitely see why it exists. And the fact that Juan, who basically just leads photo walks all over the world for all sorts of different cameras, and has this incredible community behind him, I can understand why this came from him, and I really like it because of that. So shout out to Notice and to Beers and Cameras.
Yeah, that's great. Possibly one of the most unique bezel complications, if you will, or bezel markings anywhere around. It's really, really novel. I love it. All right, where are we headed here now? Now we're jumping up here we're looking at about $1,000. Now we're on to an Astron Banks, the Terra Scout. Which, again, a really cool watch. You know, these micro brands that are just trying so hard, and they're swinging for the fences here. And this is, I'm looking at the Hodinkee story that we're linking here, and the loom shot of this thing is wild.
Yeah, I think this is a great watch. You know, I've been a fan of Astron Banks and Andrew. We've hung out with him before. I saw him last year at the Vancouver show. He makes a really incredible thing. He's also the guy behind SO Labs. These are really, really nice watches, and they all hit at a really nice price point, and they all kind of do something that isn't necessarily the most predictable. So they're all called the Terra Scout. Mm-hmm. They come in a few different versions. It's 38.5 millimeters, and it's either stainless steel that's sandblasted or Cerakote or DLC. So three really different watches in the end, 660 feet, so 200 meters of water resistance, and dial in either black or white. They're like sandwich style dials that recess the date marker. So just a little bit of an interesting way of doing a date. It's like it functions like a pointer date, where the inner dial has sort of an entire range of the date play, and then one of them will, you know, be red if that's the day. And then they have versions where you could get like a sand colored. I don't know what's left, so we don't have to go into all these details. The Desert Sand Cerakote, my favorite, was limited to 100 pieces, and you know these went on sale some time ago. But it is something where if you didn't catch it on your radar when it came out, and now I look at the photos, and yeah, the loom dial is rad, but even the standard dial, because they have this sort of two-phase luminous ring, so every 15 minutes goes from blue to green.
Yeah.
As you circle the dial. I think it's just a fun, really good looking watch. It's the right size.
Yeah.
You know, not super thick. These are using a La Joux Perret G100, which I think is uncommon at $1,000 unless I've gone crazy. I think that's quite a higher end spec movement for that price point. And they come in at 10.4 millimeters without a rather sizable box crystal, or 12.4 with the crystal, which I assume is, you know, more of an aesthetic decision than purely needing to guard the watch itself. And you can certainly see it in the photos. It has this great bubble effect. I think these are really, really successful and a nice price point. And I'm hoping it's something I get to see in person in Vancouver.
Yeah, cool stuff. Like I said, these small brands that are doing some really cool big stuff. I'm just in awe of that. That's great. All right, now we're jumping up a bit in price. Let's move on to how about the Giant Mouse and Zodiac collaboration? This is
this is unexpected and cool.
Yeah, from our friend Jim Wirth, enthusiastic TGN fan, longtime listener, Slack contributor. He works for Giant Mouse here in the U.S. It's kind of a collaboration. He's kind of their U.S. side of things, and then it's a Danish made or Danish designed knife company. And they've collaborated with Zodiac to make a kind of a set that includes a dive watch and a dive knife in a box set for $2,295. And the knife, of course, is from Giant Mouse, and you and I are both big fans of their blades. I've got a couple of their Ace folders, and then the watch is a Zodiac, you know, based on the Super Sea Wolf, the Pro Diver. And they're kind of going with the throwback color scheme that you know people might remember from a well-known 60s Seawolf from Zodiac, with that light blue and orange bezel with some orange markings and an orange minute track on the dial.
Yeah.
Just a really cool kind of set. You know, it's got that kind of beefier, not the Tropic style, but the beefier kind of accordion vented dive strap. And it comes in a box set with this knife. And yeah, I think it's a lot of bang for the buck, and you know we're big fans of Giant Mouse, and Zodiac certainly makes a handsome piece. So yeah, fun collaboration.
Yeah, no, I think it's really cool. I think for me, like the watch feels like a largely known, even similar colorway to some we've seen in the past from Zodiac.
Mm-hmm.
It's the STP automatic movement. It's cost certified. All that sort of thing comes on a rubber strap and gives you 300 meters of water resistance. The knife, on the other hand, as much as I have experience and I carry very often GMX from Giant Mouse, that I absolutely adore it. The product's incredible. This is a fixed blade dive knife with a blunted end for prying, has a line cutter built in, has 26 millimeters of serration on one side of the blade, and then it has a steel signal pommel, so at the end, we're like at the base of your hand if you're holding it for tapping against a tank or something like that, and made out of N360. I mean, everything I've ever come across from Giant Mouse is just super high end, really nicely considered, nicely made, nicely finished, all of that kind of stuff. And as far as a dive knife goes, I don't know that I've seen one kind of any cooler, certainly.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a great design. I think the knife is quite cool. And then to do the set together, I think is an interesting way of going about it. It's 300 pieces total, clearly meant for, you know, divers or collectors, kind of maybe the overlap of the two, but always cool to see a Giant Mouse working with anybody. And I think it's a pretty good looking Zodiac as well.
Yeah. I think this might be one situation where you're almost, it's hard to decide whether you're buying it for the knife and getting the watch, or buying it for the watch and getting the knife, but both are really cool. It's a nice offering.
Yeah.
All right. Now we have an interesting one here. This is from a company called Ardra Labs, and it's their Delta type. So this is a watch that just popped up on in a Hodinkee story actually today by Tantan. And it's a watch that I feel like has been around for a while because the company founder had actually, his name is Nava Krishnan, and he's from India. And I remember him reaching out to me probably via TGN a couple of years ago, telling me about this watch because I used to complain that going to Sri Lanka, you know, there was never really a GMT watch that would cover the half hour offset that some parts of the world have, Newfoundland, India, Sri Lanka, mm-hmm. and a few other countries. And
I appreciate your pronunciation of that. That means that's quite meaningful for me. even today, I had people say Newfoundland.
I had to
correct myself to go the wrong way. I mean, it's fair. That is how it's spelled or whatever.
But yeah, right.
This watch is exceptionally cool. And yeah, I feel like you and I have traded emails every 6 months to a year with Nava for some time.
Yeah.
And I gotta just put it out there. Like, I feel a little bad because all along I was like, yeah, loan me one. As soon as it's ready, loan me one. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to do a story about developing it, let's do that story. And he's a very busy guy, as you can assume.
Yeah.
And so he finally wrote me, and it was after I'd kind of transitioned into editor-in-chief. I just don't write that much anymore. It's mm-hmm. just very difficult to fit it into the schedule. And I was like, look, I got to take a pass on this, unfortunately. But I've got a nerd on staff who I think will really dig this. And I quickly fired it over to Tantan. And like in 20 seconds, he's like, this thing's nuts. Please. Yeah. I would love to take a look.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
walk people through what he does. Cause it's a really straightforward, simple, non-complicated solution to a kind of complicated problem mechanically. And he has the patent for it.
Yeah. Again, it's using, sort of a visual, you know, purely mechanical and not as in the movement, but as in the hands themselves as a way to indicate different time zones. So, you know, you have a standard minute hand, but then you have kind of your home time or your standard hour hand. And then through this, I guess I like the way that Tantan described it. It's kind of an open-sided triangle.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the standard GMT hand that points to a second time zone. And then you have another kind of pointer that's pointing to a 45-minute offset or a 30-minute offset. So, and they're all rotating together on the dial, and it's just and pointing to a rotating 24-hour bezel. So it's just a fascinating, simple way that, like, somebody who's thinking outside the box along the lines of, as we've discussed, you know, the tech Gombessa from Blancpain, you know, things like this, where rather than overcomplicating it, they're almost oversimplifying things and saying, what's the simplest way to do this? And how can we do this using the hands? And I just really admire it. And then the rest of the watch, It's you know, when I look at it, it has kind of that Monin style, CWC style case, kind of a diver style steel case. And it's just a really neat thing, and just, you know, never see anything like it.
Yeah. So so you have your 2 hour hands, of course, being a GMT, and then you have this wild, and I read Tantan's story and I agree. Like, once you wrap your head around the fact that it's essentially like an open triangle or like an arrowhead.
Yeah.
But with nothing meaningful at the back. So the three points are all indicating minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But you really, if you just want to read the conventional minutes in that time zone, it's the prime, like it's the vertex of the triangle of the preserved triangle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just think this is fabulous. I think it's super cool. It has a really simple delineation because each of the 3 minute pointers, it's one hand that mm-hmm. points in three directions.
Yeah.
Or to 3 points on the dial, but each one is color coded. And then the color itself, there's a little chapter on the dial or a little reference on the dial. So, you know, white being zero, light blue being half hour, and then 075, 45 minutes being the final reading. I just think it's very cool. And it's also not unlike what you were saying there just a moment ago, Jason, when he was originally sending us emails, in my mind I was like, what is this? Is going to be so much harder than it needs to be, or so complicated that it will only apply to people who really need this,
yeah,
rather than being like a really cool way to have a travel watch. And then in the end, it's quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain immediately knows it's weird,
yeah,
because you're so used to hands being a certain shape,
mm-hmm.
and having endpoints. And then on top of that, I would say it's like, yeah, largely wrapped in a very traditional sports style case. I would think Monin crossed with the current Longines Spirit Zulu,
mm-hmm.
with the, you know, the radial brushed steel insert, pretty straight, clean lugs. It's a nice size. Yeah, I think this is really, really cool. I mean, I'm sure that these are going to sell out. They're starting kind of small with these. It's 300 pieces at $2,500. and you know, I don't think it solves a problem that afflicts people permanently, even people in that. I'm assuming over time you just adapt or you run a watch that can totally adjust its time zone.
Mm-hmm.
But man, this is a really cool way of going about it in like an artful sort of manner. And you know my love of a 12-hour bezel,
yeah,
because it adds no actual complexity to the watch. Look what he's managed here. It's like the the craziest form of a 12-hour bezel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, great job. All right, let's move on to what I consider, at least on this list. I was gonna introduce, you know, when we do these new watch roundups, I was thinking of introducing a question at the end of like, which one would you pick out of all of these, mm-hmm, you know, each episode? But I'm just gonna, you know, cut to the chase here. This is my favorite watch of the list. It's the Vertex M36 Desert Edition, or DE. You know, we're both big fans of Vertex, It just amazes me at how, you know, Don, the owner, I believe he's the great grandson of the founder of Vertex, who we've had on the show a long time ago, how he's able to iterate A, such a simple watch, and B, such a like a classic old design. You know, basically this is the reissue or reinterpretation of the Dirty Dozen piece that Vertex,
right,
issued or was supplied to the Ministry of Defense during World War II for the British military. And he just kind of keeps spinning out these different versions. And this one is a limited edition for British Watchmakers Day 2026, which is coming up very soon. I believe this coming weekend. So if you're in London, go check this out. Again, Vertex M36 Desert Edition, and it's got, you can get it in either a bronze or a stainless steel case, the 36 millimeter case. This one has a Sellita caliber SW260 automatic, and it's good for 100 meters of water resistance. The neat thing about this is it has this kind of sand-colored dial. It's a bit of a tribute to the long-range desert recon group during World War II that kind of worked with the SAS in Libya and the North African deserts. And it just looks so sharp. It's got the three-dimensional lume that you expect on Vertex, but then they put a dark frame around each of the numerals so it stands out against that lighter-colored dial. And only 30 pieces of each steel or bronze. And it's about $2,265 for each of those. And I don't know, it's such a killer. I just love this thing.
I missed when this, like when the email came out, or maybe it was on social, and a friend texted me and goes, man, that desert Vertex is awesome. And I went and looked it up quickly and saw the bronze one. I was like, oh yeah, that's cool. I get it. That's cool. You know, I'm not a big bronze guy.
Yeah.
I'm not really like a brown tone guy usually,
mm-hmm,
in terms of dials and that sort of thing. And then I saw the steel one.
Whew. Yeah. Yeah.
30. Only 30. Somebody's going to have a very cool watch. M100's on my short list. I'll have one at some point. Like I said, I think on last week's episode, like I saw Frank's in New Hope,
mm-hmm,
and absolutely loved it. Shout out Frank, one of the guys that shows up and supports those great New Hope hangs. And I just thought it was great. He had on like a ladder style bracelet. It just wore really nicely. All really cool stuff. But yeah, I think cool desert dial thing, and man, I'll include it because there's so many in there that it, you know, we would go for hours, but there are a ton of cool watches being announced for British Watchmakers Day. And if you didn't see the story that Tim Fox wrote for Hodinkee covering all of them and giving you links to each one to check out, I'll include it in the show notes as it's a good one. In the interest of time, because we do have a time limit on today's show due to other engagements, I do have a double set here before we get to a quad of, yeah, German watches. But I have a double set of very good, very interesting titanium watches, two different price points.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is the Christopher Ward Bark and Jack Green 15. So this is not available anymore. I think there's a wait list on it. There was a pre-order period. I think it was quite successful. I'm bringing this up specifically because I got to see Adrian from Bark and Jack at the Tudor event. He was also there, and this is the watch that he had on. And I have some experience with the Lumiere, which is kind of the base for this watch, and this, mm-hmm, is better. This feels a little bit more specific. It feels a little bit more dialed in, and then checking out the Lume, it's even more fun. It's an extra 5% of spice on an already really solid watch.
Yeah.
So kudos to anyone who managed to snag one of those during the pre-order period. I'm sure we'll see a few of those pop up on the TGN Slack. Very cool watch. It's such subtle tweak versus the standard Lumiere. But I think it's a cool thing for sure. So shout out to Adrian on that one. It was a treat to see in person. And then the second one, and I think this is like quietly one of the weirder watches that came out this year.
Yeah.
Because it's an Aston Martin collab for Breitling that's also a titanium Navitimer. Now, before you get too excited, depending on your wrist size, it is the larger. It's the 43, not the 41. But it just hints, like, maybe there's a world in which we see... And also, like, I don't... Maybe do we want this? Do we want a titanium 41 millimeter Navitimer? This is only a few hundred Swiss francs over the standard Navitimer.
Yeah.
And if you're an Aston Martin fan, I think the value's there in spades. And, you know, there's a world in which, who knows what goes on with the whole Honda problem. We were less than a week away from the first outing of Formula One this year. But there's a world in which it's quite an interesting year for Aston Martin. They have Adrian Newey. They have, you know, new. It's a reset in terms of strategies and vehicle types, like all the changes to the guidelines and the regulations and stuff. So, could be an interesting year. It's definitely an interesting year for them to be supporting an F1 team and for a brand so synonymous with aviation.
Yeah,
to go into Formula One, it's got to be a push for that big wide audience, and then to do a very nerdy spec of a watch, the titanium version of an Avitimer. I just like I kept scratching my head, like, I think it's cool, but I don't know how. Like, maybe I think it's possible that the audience for the Aston Martin part is bigger than the audience for the who wants a titanium Avitimer.
Yeah, I do wonder about that, and I think the aviation motorsports overlap is. I was going to say it's weird, but IWC does it all the time. I mean, they've been doing it for years. And again, pilot's watch. I mean, the F1 drivers are called pilots. You can make it work for yourself, however you want to justify, you know, your 9,000 Swiss francs for this one. But a titanium Navitimer is just cool. And I'm sure, you know, 43 is a big watch, no matter how you look at it, but it will be at least lighter than a steel 43 millimeter. And I like the coloring. I like the restraint they used without a lot of branding. It's a cool piece.
I think it's a good looking watch. You know, there's that side of me that just loves the idea of taking an old school design and doing it in titanium.
Yeah.
It's there in the CWN1. It's, you know, I think I see it in this as well. I'd be excited to see if they could do something closer to the throwback models. But in this material,
yeah,
maybe titanium's having a moment. Maybe it's just a confirmation bias. I don't know, but I do think it's kind of a cool thing. With that in mind, about 15 minutes left here, you want to jump into our friends at Zinn and their recent run of many new releases?
You know, I got this email a few days ago, as I'm sure you did with their new releases. I love seeing emails pop up from Zinn because they're very very understated in kind of their descriptions and
just matter of fact.
It's just very matter of fact. Yes, very. You know, I hate to lean on cliches, but it feels very German. They love to talk specs, which we love. So they have three versions of their 903, which is Zinn can be a little confusing with their nomenclature and their numerals for their names, but the 903 is a watch that I don't know the exact history of this, but there was a time when Breitling had to liquidate during the quartz crisis, and a few brands kind of took chunks and pieces and different technologies and designs, and Zinn was one of them, and they were making this 903, which is basically a Navitimer. So it's interesting that we switched from the titanium Navitimer right to this 903, because it is basically a three-register Navitimer. I wouldn't want to say look-alike. It has its own Zinn-ness to it, but... it's a nice Navitimer alternative. Our good friend Matt Ludvigsen has a previous version of this that I've seen, and I absolutely love it. What's interesting about this one is they've got three versions. So they've got the 903 Thai anniversary. So it's a titanium. Here we go. Just like the Navitimer.
That's why I was happy when they kind of came last.
Yeah, the 903 ST. And then they've got the ST2A. Then they've got the ST2G, which is basically a green dial version. So what the previous iterations of this watch, you might remember, had a very kind of weird way of activating. Well, not a weird way, but a different way than the Navitimer of actuating the internal rotating scale on the slide rule. It used to be with a crown at 10 o'clock that would rotate an internal bezel, and then you'd still have the chronograph pushers on the right side.
Right.
This one actually uses now they're actually. Using external bezel grip to turn the internal timing scale. And, you know, in typical kind of Zinn technology fashion, they're using something called DSP technology, which allows them to get 20 bar or the equivalent of 200 meters of water resistance using this chronograph with this hybrid sort of internal external bezel actuation, which is quite impressive. That's no small feat. Yeah. So that's kind of the significant part of that. I think these are really handsome. The ST2A has this kind of dark gray kind of slate sort of dial. The green is nice. Mm-hmm.
A little bit of red accents.
Yeah. And then the anniversary version has the blue, which is beautiful with the contrasting mm-hmm. reverse panda subdials on that one. So these are really cool. They're expensive. You know, Zinn usually doesn't come in at the top of our range when we talk about new watches, but these are pushing it. So the anniversary, the titanium is $49.40. The ST2A is $42.60 on a strap, and the ST2G is $46.80 on a bracelet. And then finally, we have kind of another interesting release from Zinn, kind of a niche one, more specific to I think it's a German foundation called Sporthilfe. And it's a white dial, very spare, beautiful, minimalist looking 144. It's the 144 STSA Sporthilfe. Yeah. Probably not a watch I would buy, given the kind of specific reference to this organization. It has a small logo on the dial, which is pretty unobtrusive and fairly handsome. But I love the use of the red chronograph hands against that white dial in the 144 format. It's a neat piece. I have a 144 and I just love this form factor.
Yeah, and I mean they do special edition 144s every now and then. There was a great Lufthansa blue orange.
Oh yeah.
144 STSA GMT, similar to the one that I had, which was just the black dial.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think this is really handsome. I think people got really excited about it and then like just calling balls and strikes here. And I'm not even saying it's a strike because, you know, we're talking about a limited edition of 300 pieces
mm-hmm.
for a known market
yeah.
of this collaboration. But it is expensive if you're used to the number that would have floated around previously for a 144 chrono.
Mm-hmm.
This is $5,600, $5,640 from Watch Buys.
Yeah.
41 millimeters, you know, uses the Zinn's C99001 chronograph, automatic chronograph. So it's largely similar to 144s. You're getting the white dial, but it is, you know, it's a jump up in pricing for this connection with this the Deutsche Sporthilfe, which is what the I'm being told it's performance, fair play, and togetherness. And the pyramid logo is on the dial. So I don't want to speak to the community surrounding that product. I don't know it well enough to weigh in. Jason, I'm not sure that you do either.
No.
But it feels like a big number. But that's it. This is I think where we've seen Zinn's chronographs trending largely. And if you remember last year, my excitement over the 613 dive chronograph
mm-hmm.
was partly tied to I'm a little bit surprised by where the pricing is lower than I expected.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think this might be in the same shift to the higher side, but you know, for limited editions and that sort of thing. And it could be the kind of thing that they're pricing specifically for the German market. And that's how it'll go. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. True.
Cool enough. Stuff though.
Yeah.
And that 903 TI anniversary.
Mm.
I think it's just that's one. I mean, I'm very excited. They're showing at Watches and Wonders this year.
Oh yeah.
So they're in the PAL Expo, and we'll be able to see their stuff. And it's one of my five favorite meetings of that entire event.
Yeah.
Of being there, normally you have to go to Time to Watches for it, but that's on my list of ones to see for sure. I think it's going to photograph beautifully. I'd love to see it on a NATO or a canvasy style strap, something like that. I think would be a lot of fun and a nice match. And you know, $5,000, that's you're in the range of the Tudors and the Tag Heuer, like the new Carreras. So like that, with that competition, it doesn't feel that surprising.
Yeah,
it's just I think sometimes you put a number in your mind for a brand, and that's not all the way that it is, especially when they add in titanium and a limited edition and you know check more boxes, right?
Yeah,
cool thing though.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's our new watch roundup. That only takes us to March 2nd. It's only been 2 months. I'm sure we forgot some. Which is a great option for the TGN Slack. If you guys want to bring up the ones that we didn't cover or ones we might have missed, I'm sure we'll do another one of these, you know, by May. We'll have lots of new watches in April. But we had this list of a couple watches I was really pumped about, and especially with like the Delta Type finally having a story to share on that, the Ardra Labs watch and the Titanium Navitimer, and I thought the Citizen Suyosa Shore was quite cool. And yeah, it's a solid list of watches, and some that I'm, like I said, like with the Astor and Banks ones, I'm hoping to be able to see come the end of April when I'm at the Timepiece show.
Yeah, and a, definitely a very TGN vibe among all of these. There's, we've got Vertex and Zinn and Astor and Banks and, you know, of course, the Timex stuff.
Yeah, so, yeah, really. Yeah, we got types for
fun
sure.
Fun episode.
Yeah. All right, well, let's put a bow on it with some final notes. You want to go first?
Sure, yeah. So I've got a friend who lives up in Duluth recently. Was accepted to the Explorers Club. So congratulations, Ryan. This is Ryan Rumpke, who's a good follow on Instagram. You should check out Ryan Rumpke, R-U-M-P-C-A. We'll put a link in the show notes. He's a really talented cinematographer and photographer. He helped me edit my Defender Trophy video. And he accompanied a kind of a small film crew to join Peter Schurke. So Paul Schurke was Will Steiger's navigator when he did the first dog sled trip to the North Pole, and his son Peter has kind of taken up the adventure mantle from his father and works as a sailboat skipper in Svalbard, Norway. And Ryan went over there and spent some time on Peter's boat and helped film some of the footage for this YouTube video called Where the Wind Takes You. It's about a 12-minute video, beautifully shot, you know, some drone footage and onboard footage and some interviews with Peter Schurke. And you know, that part of the world is just so gorgeous, and to sail there is just such a neat thing. And they see polar bears and, you know, calving glaciers, and it's just it's a beautifully shot video. And I just want to give Ryan a shout out and direct people to his video. He does really, really cool work, and he's a good follow on Instagram as well. So check that out, Where the Wind Takes You on YouTube.
Oh man, that sounds awesome. I've been in like a bit of a rut of like YouTube. Sometimes I go in and there's nothing in my subscriptions. There's nothing
yeah.
new.
Yeah.
And other times I go in and like the algorithm gives me two or three videos I really enjoy. And yeah, so this is great. This sounds awesome and definitely something yeah. worth checking out.
Yeah.
Mine this week is a piece of gear. I do commonly talk about cameras and that sort of thing. I don't that commonly talk about flashes. For a really long time, many, many years, maybe even longer,
mm-hmm.
two camera systems back, I used to use a Canon, like a big expensive Canon flash. And I dropped it and it broke. So then I bought a Godox because everybody on the internet was like, hey, especially if you use manual settings, which I do because I was shooting off camera and didn't spend the money for an expensive trigger that could do TTL. And really, like, if you're taking a watch photo, the light's not changing. You're creating the light. So it's just a question of positioning the flash and then raising or lowering the power until you get the photo you want.
Yeah.
A little bit of trial and error. Do it 10,000 times and it becomes quite easy. Recently, I've wanted to just consistently minimize my gear, less and less and less things that do very specific things in ways that I enjoy them. And as such, you know, I have a big heavy camera and I'm always looking, can the rest of this be lighter, smaller, easier to travel with, more flexible, that sort of thing. And so recently I found out that one the same brand I've been using for years called Godox, they've really come up in the scene in terms of their impression. I think for a long time they were just considered like knockoffs, and now they're doing a lot of their own sort of stuff. And the one that really caught my eye is the IT32. It's a flash, I believe I posted about it on the TGN Slack a little while ago as well. And it's a little tiny flash. It's about a third of the size of a 600 series full size flash that I would carry around. It also doesn't use batteries, like AA batteries or whatever. It uses a built-in rechargeable USB-C battery. And it has a little screen on it, and it can be triggered by almost any of the Godox triggers, including the ones I already have for my Leica. And then the further interesting thing is, one, it's $70. Nice little tiny flash. It's $70. And then currently they don't make a specific, what they use a system for these called X5.
Mm-hmm.
And it follow me here. So normally a flash has a little hot shoe that clicks into your camera.
Yeah.
This by stock doesn't. It's just a flash that sits on a table, I guess, and can be triggered by a remote. You then have to pick the mount that is for your camera, Sony, Nikon, Canon, Fuji, whatever, and their forthcoming Leica one. And then that mount is actually magnetic and clicks into the bottom of the flash. So you can use the flash on camera and then just pull it off and it goes into remote mode.
Mm.
Pull it off, set it on a table, fire that way, hold it up with your hand like it's, you know, party style or whatever. It's a really, really cool thing that kind of borrows elements from the LightPix Lab flashes, which have their own pluses and minuses, and just standard sort of strobes, on-camera strobes.
Yeah.
And I can't report on how many flashes you'll get from a charge, but at $70 and for the size, I could carry two of these at Watches and Wonders and have one charging off of a battery pack in my bag while I use the other.
Yeah.
So no double A's to worry about, no double A chargers to worry about. Everything's USB-C. Everything can run off of a decent-sized battery pack. I'm so, so impressed by this. I even, just today, and I'll talk about the rest of this on a future episode, but just today I also took delivery of a Ricoh GR3X. Shout out James P. from the Slack, who sold me his. I got it today. I put my Leica trigger on it, an X3L, put it on, put it in manual mode, and it immediately fired the flash.
Hmm.
And like I was getting really, really good wrist shots around the office with this thing. So I'm absolutely thrilled, and I would normally not spend a lot of time talking about a flash, but if you want to make that jump into the next level of watch photography where you're controlling the light, now I have something to recommend that's $70, not $400 or $200, and is relatively straightforward in terms of how you use it. You roll a wheel one way and the power goes up and it gets brighter, and if you have too much light, you go back down. It's not like it's, I wouldn't call it incredibly intuitive, but you could learn from a couple YouTube videos. So yeah, that's the IT32. And then if they make an X5 for your camera, all the better. But tiny, useful, you know, really nice to use with people and that sort of thing if you wanted to get into that. But yeah, I'm super happy with it. I had like my entire kit for this trip, the microphone that I'm talking into now, the recorder, my flash trigger, all fit into a watch case for a Unimatic. It's all zippered up and just sits in my bag, and it's it gives me a light version of a kit. And now you add in the Ricoh, and I can do a certain type of work, run and gun, shoot coverage, that sort of thing with very limited stress. So I wanted to shout that out. If you're not a photographer, you could have skipped the last couple minutes and we can wrap up the show and give you a quote and send you on your way. But I'm pumped about it.
Oh, that's great. I think we got enough camera nerds and gearheads that I think will appreciate that. And you know, anytime you can downsize your kit without compromising the quality, that's great. So cool product.
For sure.
All right. That does a show. That was a fun one. Really action-packed. Lots of interesting stuff there. So.
Yeah. I mean, moves and kittens and tons of watches and some camera flashes and a great video and all that sort of thing. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or even consider supporting the show directly, which could get you into the TGN Slack or even your own new TGN signed NATO, please visit thegreatnato.com. Music Throat is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Seneca, who said, "Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end."